Blog Talk Radio. Happy Monday night. Hello, and we are live on Nerdiversity Radio. We are on the Authentic You Radio Network. I'm coming to you live from the Greater Toronto Area. My name is Heather McRae, and I'm the world's first and only neurodiversity coach. Neuro of the brain, diversity, difference, brain difference. I am a coach for different thinkers. If you'd like more information about what I do and how I do it, you can look at my website, which is processdifferently.com. processdifferently.com. I coach my clients according to the 8 principles of neurodiversity as created by Dr. Thomas Armstrong, PhD. And Neurodiversity Radio, as I purport it to be, is as diverse as the universe. And one of the things that I can say that I am proudly is a really good reader. And although I grew up with ADHD, one of the things that, like many people with ADHD, is I can focus like a laser when I want to. And because I grew up with parents who really valued reading, I fell in love with reading at an early age, and it was one of the things that really actually helped me deal with my childhood. And when I was 14, my dad moved our family from Burlington, Ontario, Canada, to Dallas, Texas, and I got to learn all about the Southern United States, living in Dallas, in Houston, and Nacogdoches in Deep East Texas, where I went to college for a little while at Stephen F. Austin State University. Go Lumberjacks! And also lived in the Atlanta, Georgia area for about 10 years. So I'm mentioning that because I was really excited. Several months ago, I was looking online and came across the funnest website, the title of which was Southern Fried Women. And I just laughed and laughed and laughed, and I thought that was the coolest thing. And I read up on the author of this book, whose name is Pamela King Cable, and I knew I wanted to talk to her just because the title alone of the book was something I just so got. And I thought of so many of my friends who are coaches and yoga instructors and other folks in the Atlanta area, and thought of all of them and how much they would like it. And it made me think of Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood and other women who have written about the South. And so I was really excited when Pamela was finally able to free her schedule to come and be with us tonight. Pamela is the author of the highly acclaimed collection of short stories, Southern Fried Women. Born a coal miner's granddaughter and raised by a tribe of wild Pentecostals and storytellers, Pamela is an award-winning multi-published author who lives to write about religion and spirituality with mystical twists she unearths from her family's history. As a young adult, she married to a megachurch ministry team member and attended years of megachurch services. She has taught at many writing conferences and speaks to book clubs, women's groups, national and local civic organizations, and at churches across the country. More than a decade in the writing, Till Avenge, which is her debut novel. She lives in Ohio with her husband, Michael, and is working on her next novel. And thankfully, she's our guest tonight. Pamela, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm so glad you could be here.
Thank you.
I have to say, I got such a kick out of the title Southern Fried Women, so
right.
I'm going to just latch on to that
sure.
one. How did you come up with that title? I have to know.
Okay. Well, Southern Fried Women was published in 2006 and was re-released in 2008. It is about Southern women and a few men who are struggling for unanswered questions and hoping for forgiveness and searching for righteousness and questioning the existence of God in their lives. Yes, the book has been well received and has sold well and still selling, and it is used in the curriculum in a few schools in Texas as part of Southern Studies, and I'm very proud of that. Southern Fried Women is not about sweet potato pie and sweet tea. There's a sharp edge to every story in Southern Fried Women. It's filled with suspense and a lot of true grit. So I really think you'll like it.
I think it sounds wonderful, and you had me at suspense and true grit, because I think that, you know, one of the things that makes stories about the South a little more interesting is when they're more real than just,
right.
you know, not really, really nice.
Yeah, right.
Now, let me ask you something. Did you write any of that from experience, and do you think most writers write from experience?
I think it's true that writers write what they know, what they've experienced, and what moves them. For me, my key inspirational force is my spirituality, and the older I get, the more questions I have, so I guess that makes me a seeker. But anyway, it's my firm belief that unless a writer suffers real pain, it's hard for them to really write about it. I think you can research the heck out of a person, place, or thing and write a pretty good story, but I think unless you, as a writer, experience some of the emotions that you write about, it doesn't always ring true to your readers. So for me, after surviving a lot of life's heartaches and hardships, it gave me plenty to write about. So, yeah, I do think that they write from what they've experienced and, you know, more than, some stories are more than others, so it all depends.
You know, it's funny that you said that, because one of my, I'm just throwing this out there, one of my favorite authors in the world is Dinah Gabaldon, and I had the...
Oh, me too.
I had the privilege of interviewing her on my show here back in February, I think, February or March.
Mm.
And I was just beside myself, because for me, she's like the Meryl Streep of authors.
Absolutely.
And you know, and her stuff is so... I mean, in terms of history, it's just wonderful mind candy, because it's so well researched.
Yes.
But like it, what it sounds like with yours too, there's absolutely that you know, science fiction twist and other stuff too. So it's really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got a new book coming up. Tell me about that.
The novel is called Televenge. It will be released in October of this year, 2012, and it's a story about, and I usually give this as my quick little pitch, it's a story about the dark side of televangelism, but it's a story about Andy Oliver. She is a faithful woman to God and to a televangelist by the name of Calvin Arturi, who is a godfather in a mafia of holy men. Her husband works on the megachurch ministry team and falls deeper into debauchery while she, you know, attempts to free him from the control of the reverend and the reverend's far-reaching influence. As she does this, she uncovers a lot of long hidden truths, even murder, and she loses everything, including her children. She fights for redemption for her family, herself, and in the process, she confronts the very definition of sin and absolutely shakes the Christian evangelical world to its core. It's very suspenseful. It's a thriller. It's a marvelous love story, and it in the process she evades a lot of ruthless adversaries who go to any lengths to protect the reverend, and in the process she does battle the dark side of televangelism. So in a nutshell, that's what that book is about, and I'm very proud of it. It was 10 years in the writing, and it took a lot. Blood, sweat, and tears on the page, I'll tell you. So, yeah.
I believe it, and I have no doubt that a whole bunch of it is based in a whole lot of reality. I have no doubt. So why did you write it? Did you have a lot to... I'll bet you have a lot of experience having been the husband of somebody who's involved in a megachurch.
Like we were talking about, we write from our experiences on... although this is not a tell-all, it's not a memoir. It's truly a book of fiction. But for 25 years, I was a member of a megachurch owned and operated by a TV evangelist, and was part of the inner circle because I was married to a ministry team member for 17 of those years. He traveled with this televangelist all over the world and held faith-healing crusades everywhere. And under a lot of distress, I left the church in 1988 and lost everything in the wake of that rebellion of mine, including my husband.
I believe you.
Yeah, including my husband and a in a bitter divorce. So, you know, I did not write this book specifically for the Christian audience. I'm not a tax preacher. I'm a storyteller, and I want to tell a great story. But I also wanted to deliver to you, as a reader, the realities and the long-lasting devastation and the horrific effects of televangelism and as happened in this story, and legalism. I also wrote Televenge to help myself heal and to show that pastors are human and to encourage, you know, others who struggle in a dogmatic church to share their stories and hold their pastors accountable, save families from ruin. So,
so much respect for you for that, Pamela, because, I mean, everything you're saying, I just watched some of this stuff. I can remember when I was in high school, and, I mean, although I was brought up Anglican in Canada and was involved in the Episcopal Church and stuff, I had friends that were involved in a Presbyterian church, and I won't say where and when just because I don't want to get in trouble. And,
sure.
You know, but I went to Jekyll Island, Georgia, to a high school retreat, which even then when I was really, compared to the person I am right now, very unconscious, not self-aware or anything, I sat there watching this whole thing going, oh, my God, this is a programming thing. They had all of this music and all this stuff and all of these things they were saying to all of the kids, and it was like, holy crap, they want everybody to turn into a robot right now.
Yeah, I understand the messages. I still am a woman of faith. I still believe in the covenants of my Christian upbringing, and but I also know what happens in the inner circles of megachurch ministries, and I lived, you know, that life and had a backstage pass to these faith healing services and crusades. So I put it into the pages, what it's like to be behind the scenes and to lose a spouse, but not to drugs or alcoholism or even to another woman, but to God. So, you know.
And the question for me, Pamela, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. Are you really losing it to God or to ego?
Some do lose it to ego, I think, but in my particular case, it wasn't. It was definitely to the pastor, and I lost him to the pastor. He loved his pastor more than it's my opinion that he loved his pastor more than his family. So, you know, that I translate that into the story, and all those hurts and everything go into the story, but it's not my story. It's Andy Oliver's story, and it's not everything that I experienced. It's her own story. And so,
oh, I got you.
But it's a great way to explain what happens within a mainstream church that tends to be a little more dogmatic, and the pastors just run rampant. So
that sounds to me like an example of how one of the things we talked about is how. And I thought about this long before you and I ever met. So, I mean, believe me, you know, when I said you were preaching to the choir, I wasn't kidding. I thought for you the televangelists were dangerous. And you know, I look at most of them and think, holy cow.
Yeah. I think, you know, we have to be able to discern that. And not everybody knows, not everybody can tell. I think if you're asking me if televangelists can be dangerous, let me just say that these men and women are the rock stars of religion. Their influence is worldwide. Many of them, not all of them are corrupt, but, and the desperation for paying for television time can drive those with the best intentions to the gates of hell to make the kind of money they need to save face and prove they're called of God. So if they're not held in check, yes, they can be dangerous. This includes religious leaders of every denomination and church size. I personally know tormented individuals who wonder if they're going to hell because they left their church over 20 years ago. It's up to the congregation to hold their apostles, their prophets, their evangelists, their pastors, and their teachers responsible, and not just for the finances of the church, but for what they preach to their congregation. So, Yeah, they can be dangerous, yes.
You know, it's funny that we're having this conversation because when I was actually a chaplain's assistant when I was in college through the Episcopal Church, and mm-hmm. I actually got completely turned off God, Jesus,
yeah.
everything, because I made the mistake of going to council where all of a sudden I learned all about the politics of the church, none of which had anything to do with Jesus or God, and I walked away from it. And
that's interesting. That's interesting to me because, you know, when this all happened to me, I did walk away from God for a period of time. I was devastated. It ruined my life, literally. I mean, it took everything from me. I ended up homeless. I mean, my life was just absolute hell, and they tore me apart. And so, did I blame God? Yeah, for a while I did. And but you know, I think for me, the road back to wellness and wholeness. I realized that God had a hand on my life, and had it not been for His hand, I probably wouldn't be able to sit here and talk to you today. So, it hurts people like you. I mean, you know, it hurts people, and I don't think that everybody realizes how bad that can hurt, and how bad people are hurt by pastors who just take over their congregation's lives.
So what were, Pamela, can you talk about what the specific circumstances were around you leaving the church under distress?
You know, the long years of fighting for my husband, who loved me more than his pastor, and the church was just a constant tug of war. It was never a comfortable life. The family did not come first, and you know, I made a lot of mistakes, too. It wasn't him. I mean, there's two sides to everything like that, but... I accepted, you know, I did the best I could. I struggled to put a roof over our heads, food in our mouth, and take care of our children. And then one day I asked myself, do I pay my tithe or do I feed my kids, you know?
Holy crap.
And I did the best I could. Like I said, made a lot of bad decisions. But in the end, we were both forced to choose. As far as the church was concerned, I became unredeemable. I became the apostate. I was the dog returning to its vomit. So I lost my home and my standard of living and everything, my marriage, all in a very short time. So, yeah, it was very devastating, you know, and I walk away from that saying that, you know, church shouldn't hurt. You know, church isn't there. Church should not hurt. You know, there's such a thing as a sanctuary. What does sanctuary mean? You know, it was never a sanctuary for me. It was a struggle, a constant struggle, and I it left such a devastating impression on me that I began to write about it, and I kept a journal, and every day I would write about my feelings and how I felt. I mean, it's the only way I could survive, and I've always been a writer, so it just played into. You know, all of that, and I began to write this book many years ago. So mm-hmm. there you go.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally get it. I have always been a big fan of Jung because when my mother died of cancer when I was 19, it was like the only thing that kind of saved me. And so when I walked away from the church, I just pretty much, you know, got into divine feminine and the goddess and archetypes and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ever denounce Jesus per se. I just didn't know what to do with him. Mm-hmm, so I just kind of, you know, went with the archetype thing. And it wasn't really until I studied Kabbalah that I had a completely different perspective about it all.
Right.
But I don't know how you survived any of that. How in the world could you be asked to choose between feeding your children and tithing?
Yeah. Well, that was just the way it was. We just didn't have a lot. And it was, you know, this was in the late 70s, early 80s, up until the day, you know, the day we separated and the day we divorced in 1990. But, you know, I'm no longer angry or bitter. I forgave a lot of people a long time ago. And, you know, I don't belong to any church right now. I don't belong to any church. And I doubt I ever will. But I'm not an agnostic. And like I told you, I still believe in the Christian faith and the covenants that I grew up with. But I have become very tolerant, which a lot of fundamentalists are not, as you know. I may not agree with you,
said,
but, Yeah, I may not agree with you, but I believe you have every right to your beliefs, and I believe that the great plan of redemption belongs to us all. And I also believe that God's mercies are truly renewed every morning, and that he never turns his back on us, no matter what anybody preaches from their pretentious pulpit. So, you know, that's another reason why I wrote the book. So, it's a great story. You know, it brings all of this to light. And, you know, after many years, I mean, they always say, be careful what you do to a writer. Well, again, truly, it's a book of a story of you know, a lot of things that are just certainly made up, and just you know, it had to be because other than the few things that happened to me, you know, my life isn't all that exciting, but certainly in this book, it's definitely a thriller on every page. So I'm very excited about that, the way it turned out. So.
So how did you come up with the title and the cover art?
Well, if you notice on the cover, there is an angel with a sword at his side, and my publisher and I, my publisher Satcha House Publications, who is just a fabulous publisher, I love them to pieces. We decided that the avenging angel just seemed a natural choice. And when we saw this picture, it just hit us all pretty hard, and that's what we decided to put on the cover. The title actually came from a literary agent, Catherine Sands. She really came up with the title many years ago. I was driving her around North Carolina, and from one writing conference to the next, and I was giving her my perfect pitch, and when I told her the title I had at the time, she says, "Oh, no, she says, you can't call it that. You should call it Televenge." And it just struck, you know, me, and I thought, oh, that's perfect. So ever since then, which has been many years ago now, that's what I've called it.
That's so great. So how? One thing I want to make sure that, I mean, I've been wrapped in what you've been saying. Can you please give everybody all of your contact information,
sure,
where to find your book, mm-hmm, all that stuff?
Right, the website and the blog, and you can get that at PamelaKingCable.com. And you can pre-order Televenge on Amazon.com at this time. And Southern Fried Women you can get from my publisher at Satcha House Publications, or any bookstore, you can order it from them. So.
That's just phenomenal. Now I read in your bio you do writers workshops. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Right.
So talk to me about the writers workshops. What kind of advice do you have for writers? I mean,
well, you mentioned Diana Gabaldon, and many years ago, I guess it was in 2004. I met her at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham, North Carolina, and. She was there to do some research. Of course, you know, the Scottish all came into that area, and she was there to do some research, and she spoke at the bookstore. And I took in my hardback, my big, thick Outlander book. And she, of course, signed it, and I told her that I was writing a novel, and told her, and she was just so sweet and so kind. And she gave me a piece of advice that I'll never forget, and it's so simple, and it just works. And I have it on my monitor, and I keep it there. And it just says, read, write, and never stop. And I think that was the best advice that anyone could ever give to me. And I pass it on to a lot of writers when I do workshops. Because if you're a writer, you have to read, and you have to continue to write. You have to write every day, even if it's something, stream of consciousness, whatever. And you should never stop. You should never give up. I mean, there are so many times I wanted to give up, so many times, because the struggle of the publishing industry certainly flows right down into the writer's lap, and we struggle so much with all of it, with everything that the publishing industry is going through. And now that there's social media, as you know, we have to get on there and be on there, and I mean, it's just everything, you know, it's just everything. And so you have to carve out time You know, I was a single mother for many years and worked full-time and managed somehow to continue to write, even if it was in the evening or early in the morning. I mean, we just never stop. And no matter, you know, the bricks that are thrown at us, we just have to continue. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things that I talk about in the conferences or at a writing group. A lot of what I talk about is public speaking, because I think that's your best ally as a writer. But this little piece of advice that Diana Gabaldon gave me is the best thing I could ever say.
Yep, read, write, and never stop. I wrote it down. I think that's phenomenal. It's funny because when you were talking about being a single mom,
mm-hmm.
and working and writing, it made me think of J.K. Rowling, and mm-hmm. I was thinking you're in such good company, because look at the amazing things that women are being able to do now.
Right.
You know, that culturally just weren't possible 40 and 50 years ago.
Yes.
And
absolutely, especially being a writer. I mean, so the windows are open, and who knows which way the industry is going to go. We're just all floating around and hoping that it, you know, continues to go well. And we do the best we can, and we just believe, that's all. We just have to believe in ourselves and in the publishing industry itself.
Oh, yeah, and Televenge sounds like such a juicy book. I mean, it would make a really fun movie, I think.
Every time I talk to somebody, that's what they say. And, I have to agree. It would make a great movie. And, who knows? And we'll just continue to – we have 3 months until the book comes out. I have a great publicist, and they're – you know, doing their darndest to get the word out and the buzz started and all that good stuff. So we're just pretty excited. And it's a different story, because I don't know that anyone's ever written a juicy fictional account of the evangelical lifestyle. And that's what I've done. Definitely.
Right. Not from the perspective you're talking about, that isn't more of the robotic, I don't even know the right words to use, but just, you know, buying into
mm-hmm.
it all rather than the behind the scenes drama.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, it just sounds like such a book.
Yeah, we're not really talking so much about the old timey charlatans that came to town in tent revivals. I mean, I attended many tent revivals as a kid. You know, my mom tells me that I, you know, cut my teeth on a church pew. So, you know, I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about the big mega churches today, the ones that are on television, the ones, you know, there's a lot going on, and I think that, it's a billion-dollar industry after all.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of stories out about it, and not a lot of people who have experienced it have really, really wanted to come forward and write about it. But I decided it was time. Yeah. Yeah, it's really not a memoir. It's certainly, you know, I had to visit a lot of dark places, of course, to write the story, but it's Andy Oliver's story, not mine. So, but it's a great one. It's a great one.
Have you thought about writing a sequel or having her as a recruiter?
Well, we're talking about that. The book ends very satisfyingly, I think, but there's still a couple questions there, I guess, and I'm going to see how Televenge goes, and then we'll decide. I do have another book that's done, and hoping to get that published again next year. Mm-hmm. So we'll just see how everything goes.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Thanks.
Pamela, will you come back once your book is out and talk
about
absolutely.
It? Oh, absolutely. It's been so great talking to you. You're just so easy to talk with. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate that, Pamela. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I wish you all the best with your book.
Thank
and
you.
And I do look
Thank
forward
you, Heather.
To talking to you soon. Take good care. Thanks for coming on.
And you too.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's the end of our show. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Take good care. Love and light to you. Bye-bye.